Last hour, young Tegan called to ask what they could do to become a bug researcher. Well, Tegan, do I have the opportunity for you? I hope you're still listening. It's the Lee Rayburn Show, and up next are two guests who are for conservation biologists in the Natural Heritage Conservation Program at the DNR, here to invite you, to recruit you, actually, to be a part of Wisconsin's Bumblebee Brigade. If you have questions about our state's bumblebees or how that you can help them and join the brigade, you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, talk@WPR.org. Our guests, Jay Watson and Terrell Hyde. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Terrell, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about this Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade.
Well, we're a volunteer photo-based monitoring program. We started back in 2018 to answer some questions about what Wisconsin's bumblebees are, where they are, and to get the public involved. It's been really successful. And we hope to, like you said, recruit more participants in the project.
So Jay, how can people participate if they're interested?
Yeah, so there's a couple options. You can either just be out, not planned, and take photos of the bumblebees, and we use a platform called Bumblebee Watch to submit your photos to, and all you have to do is create an account, and you can, the process is easy. You can go through the steps right on the page and submit your observations, or if you're a little more into it, you can do a planned survey and keep track of how much time you spend looking and try to identify all the bumblebees that you're seeing at that site to submit to help us learn more about bumblebees in Wisconsin.
And we have a link to the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade webpage online at WPR.org/Lee. That's WPR.org/Lee. And Terrell, how can I tell if I'm actually seeing a bumblebee? How do we identify bumblebees? Give us the description.
Well, so bumblebees are bigger, wider, fuzzier than what you typically think of as a honeybee or a wasp. They're quite loud. Jay, I'm going to let you answer the more technical part of that question.
What's the technical part of this, Jay?
Well, yeah, typically they have longer elbowed antennas, and then they have structures on their legs to help carry pollen back to the nest. So those are some of the more technical features to help when you're looking close on ruling out whether it's a wasp or a flies or different species that look similar to bumblebees.
Do bumblebees sting?
Yes, they can sting. The females can sting you. Typically they do not, only if you're really in threatening their nest or, and they're in a situation where they're, feeling stressed.
So the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade is started in 2018, and it's a volunteer photo-based where you can just take pictures when you see them in the wild or participate in a survey. Is there an age restriction? Are there certain areas specifically that you are looking for across Wisconsin, Terrell?
No age restriction. In fact, one of our super users, I think her granddaughter, who is 4 years old, snapped a picture and submitted it. So it's all photos. So use your phone. Bumblebees, like Jay mentioned, they're non-aggressive. If they're visiting a flower and you get too close, they put up one of their legs to let you know, like, hey, that's a little too close. What was the second part of that?
Well, the regions. Are there specific regions that we're looking for?
So the central part of the state, the northern part of the state, we have a lot of participants in Milwaukee and Dane County. We're still, getting new observations in those areas too. Up north, around wetlands, wooded areas. Those are areas that, especially in the spring, finding out what areas that the bumblebees are visiting.
So it sounds like in our populated areas, we're probably doing pretty well with our surveys and our photographs, but in some of the places where we are a little more sparse as people, we could use a little more data on our bumblebees.
So even, you're out in the country, you have your flower garden or your vegetable garden, even roadside areas, forested areas, like in the spring, those spring ephemerals. So they're all over the state.
Got a great question here from Amber near Superior, who called but couldn't stay with us. How are bumblebees handling the wildfire smoke that's in the news right now? Can they sense it? And if so, how?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, more research obviously needed on some of that, how it impacts them, finding certain floral resources or navigating across the landscape. But, we had smoke in previous years, and the colonies that, bumblebees have continued. It's not like they haven't faced smoke in the past, thousands and thousands of years of being on the planet. So, they have ways of tolerating it, that's for sure.
Where do bumblebees go in the wintertime? They're not migrating, are they? And if so, where would we find them in the snow?
Yeah, great question. So bumblebees have what we call an annual colony where each year all the workers and the foundress queen die, and then the new reproductive queen goes into the ground typically, or into like leaf litter, some type of more protected area to shelter them from those extreme winter cold days. And then overwinters and hangs out there until we get to our spring, usually April in Wisconsin, and they come out and start looking for nest searching to start a colony for the new season.
So wait, it's just the queen that survives through the winter?
That's correct, yep.
Oh. And then it begins a whole new population of bumblebees.
Yep, the only connection from one year to the next is the new queen that's mated and then starts that colony the following year.
Does our changing temperatures in Wisconsin, which we've been talking a lot about across a number of different topics recently, does that in some way challenge our bumblebee population? Or are these some of the things that we're looking to find out with our Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade?
Yeah, we're really trying to learn more about that. Bumblebees, typically, when you look across their species, they're more diverse in our mountain areas or temperate parts or cooler climates. So yes, we think that climate change is definitely impacting them. And actually, through our project and in other monitoring platforms out there like iNaturalist, we found a new species that was never documented in the state. Actually, two, the Southern Plains bumblebee showed up in 2023, a species more to our south, obviously the name Southern Plains. And then the Nevada bumblebee, which is more of a western, is kind of moving. So, yes, they're moving around the landscape, and we're trying to learn more about, how the warming climate is impacting that.
So from what I've seen, we have about 20 different historic species of bumblebees in Wisconsin. Are there some that are being threatened by our changing climate and other invasive species or perhaps even invasive bumblebees?
Yeah, so we have now 22 species that have been documented historically and then recently with the addition of two. And some of them, haven't been seen in 40 years. One hasn't been seen. The very variable cuckoo bumblebee hasn't been seen since 1930s in Wisconsin. So some species are in really bad shape. Currently, we just went through an assessment and 8 species are considered what we call species of greatest conservation need of those 22 species in Wisconsin. So, yeah, some are need help, and there's various reasons for that.
Which what I was supposed beg the question, Terrell, what do we do if we find a bumblebee nest, and what can we do to help the population?
Yeah, bumblebee nests are really interesting. We're trying to gather as much information about them. So taking a picture similar to how Jay described, if you see a bumblebee, you can take a picture of the nest and you can report that to your Bumblebee Watch account.
Mm-hmm.
So noting how active is the nest, how many bees are going in or out, if there's only one entrance, the type of material that's being used by the bee, whether it's like a building or in grass or a rodent hole, and which direction the nest is facing. A lot of researchers are looking at, hey, how can we improve and create more areas for bumblebees to nest in? And this information is really helpful.
So it sounds like they would nest just about anywhere they could find a safe spot. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, they're pretty opportunistic. A lot of them are tied to rodent nests. We found, you know, chipmunk burrows, stuff like that. So it also comes down to they need foraging habitat around that nesting area from spring through fall. So that's another part of where that nest would be located.
Our guest, that's Jay Watson, along with Terrell Hyde. They're conservation biologists in the Natural Heritage Conservation Program at our DNR. And they're recruiting folks to join the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade. We've got a link up on our website at WPR.org/Lee. And let's go to your questions next at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. We'll start with Rod in Madison. Hi, Rod.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What do you want to know about our bees?
Well, not bumblebee specific, but I'm curious about the virus that was killing off all the bees several years back. I haven't heard anything about it. Is that still killing off bees, or what do we know about the virus?
I'm guessing you're talking about viruses related mostly to honeybees spread throughout, because honeybees are managed more like in agriculture. We have them in boxes and move them around the landscape for pollinating different crops. So very still a problem within the honeybee, raising honeybees. But some of that does spill over into our native bees. And we have 400 plus different native bee species in Wisconsin. And so we're still learning how some of that. Lots to learn, a lot of more research needed to know the impacts that's happening across the state.
Perfect reason to join the ranks of the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade. But what do we know as some of the threats to our historic bumblebee populations, Jay?
Yeah, so a lot of, you know, just loss of habitat is the number one.
That's the big one.
That's the big one. And then invasive species, changing of those floral communities. A lot of times they had a lot more diversity in them, so more floral resources throughout the season from spring to fall. Now it's being, you know, like knapweed or you know, different things like that, that just one species during a shorter time period, so that just less foraging resource available. The other thing is less weedier species. Like our agricultural systems used to have a lot more different diversity found throughout those fields, and now they're a lot cleaner. We call them cleaner ag fields, and so there's just less resources available. You know, heavier rains, all these different things all adding up, causing nests to be flooded out. So those are a lot of different factors all contribute to the decline of some of these species.
Rod, thanks for the call. We'll go to Mike in La Crosse next. Hi, Mike.
Hello, good afternoon. Just tuned in here on the last 5 minutes, so good topic for everybody here this time of year. Have a bumblebee nest established or perhaps just starting in the ground at the corner of a kid's sandbox. So obviously can't have a bunch of bees coming and going where kids are playing like that. What's the best way to move those bees and not, you know, just kill them or something instead?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're getting a lot of those right now this time of year as the nests are starting to get larger and you're seeing more activity. The ground nests become a little bit more challenging because they can be pretty deep depending on, you know, if they're using a chipmunk burr or whatever that situation might be. So, I mean, we have had people try to move them, dig them up and move them, but that can be pretty challenging, I guess, depending on the situation. Other thing is, and it sounds like this might be a safety concern with it next to a play area. Otherwise, we try to tell people, you know, if it's not, they're not aggressive, just try to tolerate them until the end of the season, because then that nest will be done. It's an annual colony. And then, you know, that area typically won't be used the following year often. So otherwise, if it is a safety concern, then sometimes you do have to go the route of having it removed through a pest control situation.
So when you eliminate a nest like that, does that what happens with the queen bee, and whether or not that we'll see any population decrease as a result of that next season?
Yeah, so I'll just add one thing to that too. Is if possible, you could submit that information, because especially we have a federally listed bumblebee called the rusty patch bumblebee, and we'd like to know if it's that species first of all, because then we'd like to learn more about it possibly. But yeah, if the nest is destroyed, there will be no new reproductive queens produced, so that's bad for that species and that population in that area.
Do these colonies ever produce multiple queens that could expand the population?
Yeah, so a very productive colony can produce, up to 20
okay.
to 30 different queens that could produce. So that's how you measure basically the success of the colony, is really how new reproductive females that are coming out, because that's the link to that next generation.
And I have to admit my ignorance. To me, I thought all bumblebees were the same. They were just one bumblebee. I have a tough time telling them apart. Terrell, how do you tell our bumblebee populations, our different species in Wisconsin, apart? What are some of the differences that we would be able to notice?
Yeah, so all insects, head, thorax, and abdomen. There's different color patterns. So there's hair on the face and on the back of the head. There's hair on the thorax where you might have a dot, a black dot, or a black band. And then the colors. So on the abdomen, for female bees, there are six sections, sometimes called terga. And on the male, there are seven. And those can be a different color. So it's that pattern of yellow and black, sometimes rusty orange or bright orange. In other parts of the world, that you'll see white and other colors, but we don't have any that have white on them. There are some nice helpful guides on both Bumblebee Watch and on the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade site, which helps you. Most bees, they have a couple different variations of color patterns, like the queen and the female workers and the males. They'll have different variations. There are some bumblebees that have quite a few. We have a red-belted bumblebee, and that has over 20 different variations we see around. So while we might only have 20 species, we have quite a variety in those color patterns.
And to go back to this rusty-patched bumblebee, which became the first bee on the federal endangered species list, it's also a bee native to Wisconsin. Is there a way that we can recognize this endangered bumblebee species, Jay?
Yeah, no, great question. So for the workers, they get their name, obviously, because on their second abdominal segment, as Terrell mentioned, the terga, they have a yellow, it's all yellow, but then embedded in that second segment is a nice rusty colored patch or a rusty area in there. And then on their thorax, they typically have a darker bandish area that kind of points downward. So that's kind of the key features that you'd recognize on the workers and males. Of course, it's the queens, they don't have that, so they're a little bit different looking. They just have two full yellow segments on their abdomen and then a nice yellow thorax with a black dot. But they're pretty recognizable for the workers and the males.
And what is their status today as far as we know?
So, they're declined. They were listed endangered in 2017. Declined across. Their range extended all the way to Maine, down into the Appalachian Mountains, over to just got into the Dakotas. Pretty much disappeared from almost 90% of that range. Ooh. We're really kind of the stronghold here up in the upper Midwest or Great Lakes in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and northern Illinois. And then there's another population still remaining in the higher elevations in like West Virginia area.
But I wouldn't need to know the actual species or be able to identify different bumblebees as part of this brigade, right? If I'm just taking pictures or doing surveys, it's just part of the citizen science that'll be sent on to those who can identify?
So we help you submit, there's different on the Bumblebee Watch page. You can help now use a bee machine. It's used machine learning to help, you know, kind of like AI, help ID the, comes up with the best case using photos it's been trained on. So that helps either give you an idea of what species you have, or you can use those guides as Terrell referred to and put in what you think it is. And then we'll go through and verify it and put in if we change it, why, you know, trying to help teach you along the way of what species you have and why that is.
So these photos go into the bee machine?
Yeah. So the bee, yep.
Terrell, go ahead.
I was going to say, taking pictures of that head and the back of the bee and the side of the bee, getting a couple different shots will really help with ID, because you can submit multiple pictures per bee. And when you're out there and you're taking pictures, try to focus on a single bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, you know, because you'll have multiple species flying around the same floral patch. So focus on a single individual, take pictures, different angles and sides. And the bee machine, which is pretty neat, was trained on photos from our Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade participants. It was a joint project with University of Wisconsin and Kansas. So it's pretty neat that I was our participants that helped create that.
So, and this project's been in place since 2018, the Bumblebee Brigade. What have we seen in terms of results so far, Terrell?
Well, at the time when we started Bumblebee Brigade in 2018, we really didn't know. We had a good idea from historic records and museum specimens, what species we had, but we didn't know where in the state they were and how plentiful they were. So we really filled in a lot of information gaps in terms of, you know, what counties, what habitats that our bumblebees are found in. So it's been over 1,000 different participants from all but one county in the state. So we have a lot of really dedicated folks out there looking, and there's a very active Facebook page. The Midwest Wisconsin Bumblebee Observers Facebook page is very active, and they're a great community. So even connecting, you know, I encourage folks to connect with that too, if they're interested.
Sure. And what do some of these historic records look like? Jay, you mentioned that some of the bees haven't been seen since the 20th century. Who was doing that data collection?
There was some research done back in the 60s. They mainly looking at agriculture at alfalfa, but so some researchers, I think the University of Madison or out of Milwaukee Public Museum, that they took an interest in bumblebees and were trying to learn more about what bumblebees were found across the state. So that was kind of a effort over, you know, probably a decade period, and then things cooled off. You know, depends on what projects and researchers are looking at. So, yeah.
I guess it surprises me how relatively recent all of this research is, and it may help explain to some degree how much there is still to learn and why your participation could be a part of making a difference in filling in some of those information gaps that still remain. It's the Wisconsin Bee Brigade, and we're recruiting you to join the ranks today, along with Jay Watson and Terrell Hyde, conservation biologist in the Natural Heritage Conservation Program at the DNR. The link to the Brigade, you can be found online at wpr.org/Lee, and you submit your photos or participate in a survey. It goes through the bee machine to help identify it. You don't need to know the 22 species that exist here. Do they coexist here? I've got more questions to come for our guests and Wisconsin's Bumblebee Brigade. I imagine you might as well. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email talk@wpr.org. We'll continue with our bumblebees next. I'm Lee Rayburn. You are listening to WPR News. It's the buzz of the bumblebee this hour on the Lee Rayburn Show, and we're recruiting you to join the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade, and you'll find a link to that as well as other items for today's conversation online at WPR.org/Lee. Our guests are Jay Watson and Terrell Hyde, both conservation biologists in the Natural Heritage Conservation Program at the DNR, part of who's operating and helping us uncover information about our bumblebee population in the state. And just to recap for those who weren't along for the first half of the hour, Terrell, tell us about this Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade and who you're looking to join the ranks.
Yeah, Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade is a photo-based volunteer monitoring project that focuses on Wisconsin's 22 species of bumblebees. Anyone can participate. You just need a camera and willingness to venture out in your garden or at your local park or natural area. It's pretty simple.
So Anthony emailed us at talk@WPR.org and wants to know the one county in the state that doesn't have a participant yet. Maybe we can recruit one there today. Do we know what county it is?
Menominee County.
We need one member of the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade in Menominee County to scratch all 72 off the list and help compile data. You can join us with your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, where Mike in Franklin's been standing by, so let's get to him next. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have some ajuga that spreads nicely in my front yard. And the flowers there attract the bumblebees in the spring when it's there. And it's one of the few places in my yard that I see bumblebees. I don't tend to see them the rest of the year, being in the kind of in the suburban area. But I'd like to know, besides that, if there's other types of plants. I like to plant things for pollinators, but I'd like to have some things if there's low things like ground covers. That would be beneficial for attracting bumblebees.
Great question. And who's best to handle that here?
That's a great point. So having plants in your yard, like if you can, planting an area that has native plants right now, you know, there's great summer resources out there like our milkweeds or bergamot or, you know, Joe pieweed, stuff like that. But sometimes you can leave certain areas of your yard that you do mow, like some of the little sweet clovers or heelal. Some of those plants will take, you know, they can handle mowing and then they pop back up. So it's another bloom for the bumblebees to go to. Violets will do the same thing. So those are some good opportunities in an area you want low ground vegetation where bumblebees can still forage.
Well, it sounds to me then like at least our historic species of bumblebees in Wisconsin aren't picky pollinators.
No, they're pretty generalist. They'll go to a lot of different flowers. They do, some of them will like, we call them short-tongued bumblebees. They'll like more of our, where the floral resources are easier to reach. They don't have long floral tubes. So those will go to the more short, you know, flowered plants like our pericone flowers or different things like that. But some of them will like our more tubular flowers and they'll go to those, like even they'll go to some of our non-native or agricultural plants like red clovers or different things like that.
Which, and as long as we're talking about habitat and the loss of habitat being one of the main considerations in the potential decline of bumblebee populations, should we be taking better care of our roadsides or railroad sides in order to support the bees? Does that make a difference?
Definitely. It's a great opportunity in our road rights of way. Great areas for pollinators. They're corridors that connect to other habitats. So if they have floral resources spread throughout, that allows them to forage and then also move across the landscape. So yeah, utility rights of way are great, great areas that are opportunities for native plants to be maintained.
Mike, thank you for the call. Gary emailed, he said after the 4th of July, he's heard that fireworks can disorient bees so much that they're unable to return to their hives. Is there any evidence to support this? Terrell?
You know, I haven't heard that, but I know some of those fireworks can be really jarring and shake my windows in my house that need to be reglazed. So
if they're jarring you, I imagine they might be jarring our bumblebees.
Right. Jay, have you heard anything specifically about fireworks?
Yeah, I have not heard that one, no.
Well, yeah, it does lead me to the question of when our bumblebees are most active. Are they something that are they more likely to be out pollinating in the mornings or evenings, or is it like the plants that they're not picky about it?
Yeah, it tends to be if we're not in this really hot spell we have right now going on, they'll be active pretty much as soon as the dew dries off, you know, in the morning, and then active all day long until they run out of daylight in the evening. But I've noticed when it's hot and humid, like we're in the mid-90s, like we were yesterday and today, they start switching to just the morning and evenings and seem to go probably in their nest or in the shade or something and take a break, take a siesta during that time of day.
They also do some fanning of their nest too, don't they? Do they run AC into their nest when it gets too hot?
Yes, that's correct. They will fan. They need to maintain a certain temperature for their nest. So they will, if it's too hot, they'll fan. If it's too cold, they'll shiver, like shake their muscles on their wings to generate heat to keep their larvae, their broods at a certain temperature.
Let's go back to your questions next at 1-800-642-1234. Mary and Madison, hi.
Maybe you just answered it. I was wondering, when the male and female reproduce, does the female go under, the queen bee go under something and then produce female daughter cells or?
Yeah, it's a good question we haven't covered yet, Mary, and thank you for asking it. When the queen bee mates with a male, what's the life cycle like? What happens next, and how many mates can a queen bee have?
Yes, yeah, so some of that we probably need a little more research on, but for what we know of the more common species, there'll be multiple males that try to mate with the new female, the new queen, and then once she mates, she pretty much goes and fattens up basically and eats a lot of good resources out there to get ready for the hibernation time and goes either, you know, underground or into some type of duff layer and gets ready for winter.
And what's the life cycle like for a bee, or does it depend on the species, the gender, the kind of work they have to do?
Yeah, all of the above. Depending on what species we're talking about, some of them are peaking right now. Like our two-spotted bumblebee, they're a little bit earlier in the season they get going, and their colonies are probably at peak right now across the state, and they're getting most of their new queens out and mating. And then some of our other ones take a little longer to establish. They get bigger, and they'll be coming out later. Males really are just coming on the scene for most species right now. And yeah, so it just depends on what species we're talking about.
And Terrell, where can we find out more information about the native plants that would best support our historic bumblebee species in Wisconsin?
Yeah, on the Bumblebee Brigade website, there are a lot of good resources. Towards the bottom of the page is a link to our native plants page. And on our native plants page, we have different guides, including a guide. And this, I thought of this with the earlier question about low, you know, shorter stature plants, because with bumblebees, you want a variety of plants for those long tongue, short tongue species. You want them to span from the spring to the fall, because bumblebees will move around. While you might only see them in the spring, if you have one plant, they're moving on to someone else's yard or area that has other plants. So if you want to create a bumblebee garden, you want at least three or four species in the spring, in the summer, or the fall, that can bring you throughout the whole season. And on the native plant guide. You can look at height of the flower, the blooming period, how much sun they need, the types of soils, moisture, where they're found in the state. We had a recommendation that wild strawberry would have been a good plant for under your collars trees as a low stature plant that's popular with bumblebees. So lots of good information on the DNR pages for native plants.
Perfect for you, Mike, if you want to move forward with encouraging that bumblebee population around your house. Let's go to Bill and Steuben next. Bill, hi.
Hi. I don't know, maybe it's just because I live in Crawford County where there's a lot of woods and pasture and everything. It's not all ag land. I do not use any herbicides in my lawn. So I have a lot of violets and white clover and red clover. And I'll just mow around the white clover and the red clover will grow up and flower, and I get all kinds of bumblebees. I haven't looked close enough to see which species they are, but I got bumblebees all over the place.
Well, you sound like you'd be a perfect candidate to join the ranks of the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade, Bill. And Terrell, I imagine that sounds a lot like the resources that the DNR is offering for what the bumblebees are looking for.
Yep. And native plants, you know, so we have, you know, Jay mentioned we have 400 plus species of bees, and some of those bees, they have favorite plants. They're maybe more specific than our generalist bumblebees. So definitely looking at some of our native plants too, to kind of augment some of the more common species or species they might find at a roadside or that kind of thing.
Join the Bumblebee Brigade, Bill. Our guests, Jay Watson, Terrell Hyde, conservation biologist in the Natural Heritage Conservation Program at our DNR, with resources for you if you are looking for native plants for our bumblebee population or would like to join the Bumblebee Brigade. And one of the questions I had, you can join with your questions too. Don't let me monopolize this for you. 1-800-642-1234. But I got a bunch of questions. 1-800-642-1234 or email us talk@wpr.org. Jay, can these species, do they coexist? Do they compete? What do we know about how the different species of bumblebees interact in Wisconsin?
Yeah, we're still learning more about that. We definitely know they coexist with each other. We're doing more long-term monitoring surveys, trying to get a better handle on what that bumblebee community is in an area. So there's definitely some of the more common species typically found across the state. And then once in a while, you'll get some of the more rare species that show up in there. And we're trying to piece that together. Is it based on the floral resources available on the landscape? Or how is that all, working together? So, yeah, but there is competition that happens. We actually, a year or two ago, had a volunteer that had a rusty patch bumblebee setting up a nest in their yard. And then a common eastern bumblebee queen came in and kicked her out of the nest kind of thing. So there's competition that definitely is happening over that limited amount of nesting habitat out there. So, but for the most part, they coexist. There's enough floral resources out there. They can survive.
And the better chance they have of coexisting with the more habitat they have available for nesting. I'm just putting that together from what you're saying, Jay.
That's correct. Yeah. Especially habitat. And I know one of the callers mentioned, minimizing the amount of pesticides on the landscape that are utilized. That's always very beneficial for our pollinators and bumblebees, too.
Bill in Oregon emailed us over the last few summers. He's occasionally been fortunate enough to see bees cutting out leaf sections and flying away with them. How many species of leaf-cutting bees can be found in Wisconsin? What do we know about them, and what plants do they prefer? Who knows more about this?
Yeah, that'd probably be in my court. So, yeah, those are our leaf cutter bees. They actually do. They have longer mandibles, mouth parts that are used to cut out them. And you'll see it usually on our roses or I've seen it on some of that group, the Rosaceae family of plants. And you'll see these little nicely circled cutout leaf areas that they take back. They line their nest cells. So these are solitary bees. It's one female. She's going back, bringing this, lining her nest with it, lays her egg in there, and then provides a pollen ball for that bee to, egg to hatch and then go through its life stage. So that how many species we have? It's 50 plus or somewhere in that ballpark of leafcutter bees across the state.
Wow. And Ellen from Wisconsin Rapids emailed, they have mining bees who have taken over the flowers on their deck. Are mining bees considered bumblebees? They thought the bees were bumblebees because of the way they move, and they're so fuzzy. They then stung their dog for walking all over their burrows. They moved under the deck now. Is there a way to make under the deck less hospitable to bumblebees in the future?
Yeah, so mining bees are different than bumblebees. Mining bees, once again, these are in our solitary bees, but each female has a different burrow within that. They're more drawn to that soil type, or that there's probably an area of bare soil there. And that's why all those andrenas or mining bees are utilizing that habitat. And that's why when the dog walked across there, they didn't like that. They thought maybe it was someone trying to attack their nest. So they were defending it. But yeah, that gets a little trickier to try to change the area of where they're utilizing that spot in your yard. Maybe changing the amount of vegetation in that area could change the location of that they find suitable in the future for nesting.
When bumblebees sting, do they lose their stinger? Is that what happens after a bumblebee makes the rare decision to go ahead and sting somebody or something?
Yeah, it's a great question. Nope, they can sting multiple times. Only the honeybee has the stinger that it breaks off when they sting, and that's partly because they have the large perennial colony, and it alerts the other workers in the nest that, they've been stung and there's a threat. And then that's kind of how that defense mechanism works within honeybees.
And you mentioned a couple solitary bee types here, but these bumblebees, they're social, right? They go back to the nest. Do they communicate? And if so, what do we know about what they're saying and how they're saying it?
Yeah, we're still learning more about that. We know a lot more about communication within honeybees, mm-hmm. but they definitely are communicating. They bring back, and then they people have been studying, researchers have been putting cameras in boxes and watching bumblebees, how they interact. And there's definitely forms of communication happening. Especially they get all excited when they come back with pollen and they must have that scent. They can know where to find it back on the landscape. So, yes, they are communicating. They are social.
So when it comes to these, and Terrell Hyde, I'll ask you, because evidently there's not just the Wisconsin Bee Brigade, but if you're asking and often the answer is yes, is there an app for that? Oh, indeed, there is an app for this as well, isn't there?
So the Wisconsin, or not the Wisconsin, the Bumblebee Watch site where folks can upload their photos of bumblebees or bumblebee nests, that is a website, but okay. It is mobile friendly. It works really well on your phone. And the DNR site is just a webpage. Yeah. Yeah.
But I found this Weeby app from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Is there any connection there?
Yeah, that's not connected to the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade. The Weeby is actually, it's more geared to, I think it started within growers like apple orchards or cranberries to try to keep track of what bees. It doesn't go to species. It's using are they green bees? Are they large bees? The black bees or mining bees, are they bumblebees? So kind of putting them into categories, trying to answer, are they having enough pollination happening within their sites? And I think it expanded beyond that, as because it was popular, people trying to keep track of what bees they're seeing.
So I apologize for confusing that with the Wisconsin Bee Brigade. And you also mentioned iNaturalist before. So there are these number of tools that can be used if you're interested in using them to be able to see what's going on in our world and with our pollinators specifically, and to play a part in adding to the science that our scientists can then collect and figure out what we're learning. And so that, I also want to know from both of you what you still want to know about our bumblebee population in Wisconsin. And Terrell, I'll start with you.
Learning more about the habitats where people are finding bumblebees, and the distance that the bumblebees are traveling
to get
to floral resources, where these populations are shifting from the spring to the summer to the fall, and they're overwintering. There's still lots of questions out there. And I also wanted to put in a plug for different pollinator events across the state that, so there's a Wisconsin Insect Fest happening next week, Friday.
Where's that?
There, that is at Olbrich Gardens in Madison.
Okay.
And you could go to Olbrich Gardens website and find out more information about the talks. And there are, it looks like, looking at our event calendar, there's something going on at least once a week for this whole summer, different events. There's an observation walk at Washington Park in Milwaukee on August 10th. Governor Dodge has an event. So, yeah.
And where are you getting the events so we can actually find them and follow along? Is that on the Wisconsin?
That is on the, yeah, the Bumblebee Brigade website. And if you don't have the website address, just go to the Wisconsin DNR page and type in Bumblebee Brigade and you will find it. And one of the attend an event and join the B3 community is one of the sections that you can expand and
I just found it. And you aren't kidding. There is something for everybody just about everywhere across Wisconsin. Most of them appear to be free, or you can register in advance and RSVP, but you can check that out at the DNR's Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade. Jay Watson, what are some of the questions you still have about our bumblebee population?
Yeah, we're still trying to really learn what those floral associations are that they're utilizing across the landscape. And then also, you know, a lot of their life is underground. So trying to learn more about that nesting requirements and what they're doing in hibernation. So kind of that secret life of what they're doing during that time period. So the exciting
secret
stuff.
The secret life of the Wisconsin bumblebee. I have one more question for you here, and it is evidently a big one. It comes from Mike in Madison. He says he just saw the largest bumblebee of his life. So now in my mind, I'm just picturing like a hand-sized bumblebee. But he's wondering about this super giant bumblebee and whether or not you can help identify what is the biggest bumblebee we could find in Wisconsin, or what did Mike see?
Yeah, it's most likely our black and gold bumblebee. They're one of the largest bumblebees in the United States. So especially if it's a queen, they're the biggest. Workers are a little bit smaller. So that'd be my first guess.
Would we see a queen out and about this time in the summer?
We could see either a foundress queen who started the nest out, maybe if something went wrong, helping get that nest going again, or some of them get started early and they could be putting out reproductive females. We're kind of in that sweet spot in the middle of summer here, so it's kind of fair game with either or.
The black and gold, and it may have been the queen bee herself, the queen bumblebee herself. I want to thank you both for being a part of the show today. I want to thank you for recruiting citizen scientists to become part of the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade. And I look forward to catching up with you to find out what we learn next about our native species and population. Thank you both for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Lee.
That's Jay Watson and Terrell Hyde, conservation biologists in the Natural Heritage Conservation Program at our Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin. And again, more about the Wisconsin Bee Brigade, the native species you can help plant to help them, what you can do to protect their native habitat, and the events that you can find, as well as how you can participate in the volunteer photo-based citizen scientist project, all at Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade. And we've got a link up at WPR.org/Lee. I want to thank the team for making the show possible each and every day today. And that would be our executive producer, Jill Nadeau, our producers, Joel Patenaude, as well as Claren Nypert, our technical director, Jeff Robbins. And I want to thank you for being a part of the show as well. We'll do it again tomorrow. I'm Lee Rayburn. This is the Bumblebee Song, and you're listening to WPR News.